Yeah, so I'm James Putnam. I've organised this thing with Miroslav here. And as Ivan mentioned, later on we're going to see some of Miroslav's video works, which, you know, not most people think of him as a sculptor, but he's also had, for at least 10 or 15 years, he's been working on doing video works. And in fact, there was a show at the Museum of Modern Art in Oxford at the same time that the Turbine Hall installation. And it would be interesting for you to see, but it gives you another sort of impression of his work. And I think Miroslav's about the sixth artist that I've shown here at the Freud Museum. And they've all been, totally different. They've all taken different themes from Freud. We had, first of all, someone like Sophie Kao, who did an installation all around the museum, sort of what we could call a museum intervention, putting her collection of works with little texts around. Then we had a show with Sarah Lucas, who really alluded to Freud's story of the Beyond the Pleasure Principle. And then there was also a show with Tim Noble and Sue Webster, where they had some of their famous shadow works. We did Matt Collishaw, who focused on hysteria. Ollie Clegg, who did a version of a special chess set made of Freud's antiquities. And I think the most recent one I did was with Andreas Hofer, Andy Hope, who had paintings on the stairs. So unlike most of the other artists, Miroslav chose not to use Freud's study. That's the sort of iconic place that most artists want to make an intervention. Why didn't you want to use the study?
Because I feel, first of all, I was not an expert of Sigmund Freud. Uh-huh. And actually, because of his exhibition, I came back to his work and what he did. And I also tried to think what the problem were analyzed before mine in the special place. And this is the special place. The same special place was Turbine Hall, and also before I came with my proposal, I analyzed, or maybe not analyzed, but I've been watching, checking what the artist did before me, just to not repeat the same gestures, or maybe to start the dialogue with something what happened before. Like, for example, for Turbine Hall, I think my piece was in dialogue with Olafur Eliasson, the sun. So I wanted to confront his vision of sun and happiness and this atmosphere at the Turbine Hall with something which is dark. And what my attention, what I noticed, that the subject which was not too much interpreted by the other artists before me, was the fact of exile, yes, it was the fact of leaving Vienna, coming here for 1 year with all the belongings, all the material world, not, and a little bit the fact of forgetting about the human belongings, the part of the family. For me, it was interesting, this fact of exile.
I mean, do you think, unlike some of the other artists that we showed here, that you really need to a space, like you've got your sculpture in the next room, and you felt if there were other bits of furniture and stuff around it, you couldn't feel in control of the space, is it?
I've been never too much fascinated with this bits and pieces, I think. This horror vacui represented in these rooms was never attempted for me, and the exhibition which I saw here in this space before I came with my idea was like the very much, it was this group exhibition, different works mixed with the works of Freud, and I was a little bit lost. I didn't know what is the object from Freud's life and what is the work of art, and I wanted to make something opposite, so you could easily see that this is the exhibition. And I found interesting this exhibition space this room, because it's not so easy nowadays to find exhibition room with such a big carpet. So it was a challenge to do something in the space, which is a kind of the old-fashioned. But because of this, it was a kind of the task for me as an artist, you know, to create the situation. I'm talking about the space and the technique, creating, to build something in such a difficult space.
Well, it's certainly, you know, very quiet space. And then you were happy that the vitrine was left empty. You didn't want anything in there.
Yeah, for a long time we had the questions from Freud Museum, but what would be in the glass between, what's going to be there? And I said that maybe the photo, but the photo of the, it would be fixed on the glass vitrine. But then I knew that it would be nothing there. But I wanted to have this vitrine empty, because empty vitrine means something as well. You know, sometimes empty vitrine means more than the full vitrine. And that's what I wanted. I even didn't want to change the position of the this glass shelves in this vitrine, but just keep the shape, like the memory of something which took place before, kind of display, which cannot repeat. And also this empty shelf is also very much related with the situation of displacement.
Yeah, I mean, I know you're very interested in the idea of dimension. Because, you know, in some of your other works, you make them the dimension of your body. I have to say, actually, tell everybody that this show is, we planned this about 7 or 8 years ago, didn't we? First planned it in the show.
I had the, yes, I think we started to think about this in 2006, when you still were the curator of the British Museum.
Yes, in fact, that's how I met Miroslav. I think it was Anushka brought you, introduced you to me, because there was a temporary corridor that built at the British Museum, which was the kind of exact dimension of your height and your span of your arms, wasn't it? And there was a plan to maybe use that to do something in that space. Of course, the museum couldn't
see. Not to do something, but I wanted to make the soap corridor.
Yeah, the soap corridor.
This was a kind of the sculptures which I made. Usually, this were situation, space situation. In the corridor, which the width of this corridor was this it was 190 centimeters, which means how much I can touch in this position, which is related to Leonardo da Vinci in some way. I covered the walls of these corridors with the soap. With a very thin coat of soap, very ordinary soap, the cheap soap, which gave a strong smell. So in this way, I created the corridor is like the space in between. Yes, it's not the space. It doesn't have a function of living, sleeping room. It's just leading somewhere. It's the space between. So it's like space, which is in use, but the function is in some way useless. Yes, you cannot put the bed in the corridor because you will stop the communication. So it's just the communication function. So the walls supposed to be covered with the soap to my height, which is regarding to Leonardo da Vinci, the same like the stretch of your arms, which is 190, and it was perfect. Because British Museum for a very long time was my favorite place. Once being in London, I always visited this place. I was in my left walking between the mummies and other sarcophags and other pieces. When I found this corridor, because of our friend Anushka Shani, who was the curator at the White Cube at that time.
Who actually lived next door to here somewhere, didn't she?
She lives 2 blocks, 20 houses away. And this is how we met. Yes. And this corridor, maybe I tell you, this was about, for me, this use of the soap. Once we are in the Freud Museum, we can tell about the soap corridor. Because the soap was the first public material which meets our body when we are born. This is when we are washed and this is the last public product which touched our body after our death. So this was the importance of the soul, you know, which accompanied our life when we are born and we are dying. So, and unfortunately we couldn't make this corridors. I don't know why.
It was in fact a sort of MDF corridor that was blocking off two gallery displays where they were refurbishing the gallery, and by the time, you know, they got to sort of talk about whether to do this or not, it was probably coming down. But even like in the early stages when we were having chats about what we do in this place, there were various things we proposed, weren't there, to do. There was even something in the garden. I remember we had to do something, and first of all, yes, that's right, yeah, there was this thing, like, you had this plan to have an old Volkswagen with an exhaust pipe going into the latrine. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember, but I always
got the... I can't believe we got away with that one. We're having enough problems with the sculpture in the front.
But, you know, when I work on the exhibition, first I collect a lot of different ideas, sometimes very crazy, sometimes very stupid. But then I understand the process as an elimination of this stupidity into the direction of much wiser solutions. But first I have to make this stupid step in my studio, which nobody sees, but I see. And then once I do this step, then I can analyze it. And if it makes sense, because sometimes even the stupid step makes sense. Like, for example, in this exhibition, this kind of the stupid step is this Y chromosomal Adam, which is the sculpture which is outside. I don't know if everybody saw the sculpture. Yes? So later we will make a demonstration of Adam. And
we have a bit of an issue with the neighbors who are complaining about bringing it up, but we're just about getting rid of this short person.
Yeah, but this was like the invitation piece. This was a sculpture which I wanted to. This is a very quiet area. And actually, the house is covering in writings of. It has even the writings of Sigmund Freud. Has a lot of strange things, which are not visible from the outside, because it's just a regular house and it's just the label of Freud's house. For most of the people, this doesn't mean anything, because most of the people know the work of Freud just from the cover, if they know something, you know, they know the work of psychoanalysis, and that's it. And it's a lot of hysteria, what? How do you say in English? Hysteria?
Hysteria.
Hysteria. And it's also a lot of dirt in the work, or analyzing the dirt in Freud's work. So that's why I brought this sculpture outside.
Did the sculpture symbolize something to you?
It symbolized vertical black tunnel. Uh-huh. And what does it symbolize for you?
I mean, you know, about the theme of concentration camps and all of that. To me, it was thinking like it was like a, you know, cremation sort of. But when it was moving around like that, it didn't really look like that anymore. But I don't know if that was intended.
Yeah, but of course, cremation and also I think the erotic side of this piece, I think, is quite
important. Oh, yeah, very much so. It looked like a big phallic symbol kind of moving around.
Probably it's the first fold which comes. But in the relation to. I want to show this piece also. In the relation to the Black Mother, or the Black Mother from Africa, which we talk only about the Black Mother, and we forget that to have the children, but has to be also the Black Father. And maybe by the phallic presence of the Black Father, we don't talk too much. Maybe it's easier to talk about our proud mother instead of our proud father. I don't know. It was like the introduction to the space, you know, something which once you see it, you can recognize, this is a Freudian, this is Freud, this is Freud, this is the interpretation of the night dreams or nightmares or something like this.
And one of the things you've done with this is also connect the two exhibitions, the one at YQ, which opens tomorrow, in fact. It seemed very, you know, sensible to have a, you know, dialogue between the two spaces and the two shows and the two themes. Can you tell us a little bit about the White Cube show?
I haven't seen. Yeah, actually, for a long time I didn't exhibit the solo exhibition in London, actually, since 2009, on the Park. So, once we decided to have these two exhibitions, I tried to find the glue which would connect these exhibitions. I didn't want to have two completely different exhibitions, different titles, in both places, in one city. So it took me a lot of time to glue both projects, and the helpful was this title, Die Traumdeutung. It's quite open, the title, and having this title, and I've been thinking what will be the difference between, because sometimes exhibition starts from the title, it works, and sometimes it starts from the object, from the sculpture, but very often I need to build the frame, and this frame very often is the title. And then once I have a frame, when I start to think what elements I can fill this frame, not the box. But so this Traumdeutung was a box, and the geographical height of these two places was the only difference in the title, because this is like 20, I don't remember the part, but you don't know. Also here it's much higher here. So here is the Traumdeutung 75.32 m AMSL, and the white cube is lower. 23, 50 meters deeper. So I've been interested in this vertical differences of the height. So in some way, also in this way, Adam, which is the sculpture outside, can be also the measurement, kind of the tool of measuring the height. Like the smoke can measure the height, chimney measure the height, so it's also about measuring the height, so I put a lot of attention in this thing. And then...
It's a nice assertion to the exhibition here, isn't it?
Yeah, so I've been working in parallel way.
This is all available as a handout downstairs, and it's tell us a little bit about how you researched this letter, how you found this letter.
I found this letter a very long time ago, I even don't remember when, but I had it in my files, because I dig in the field of Holocaust. This is what happened during the Second World War. I give a lot of attention, I take care of this, and this is like my private research on this field, what happened to the people, what people can do to the other people. And this is the letter which I found of this commandant of Treblinka sent to the commandant of Jewish ghetto, titled We Still Need, and there is a list of the materials which they need to build in the process of building the death camp in Treblinka. And so this was a very important part of the beginning of working and thinking of what I'm going to show here, as I related this letter with the death of the sisters of Sigmund Freud, who actually first, if you check in Wikipedia, there's information that three of them died in Treblinka. But when we start to work here, we came to the point search, only one died. But then, after this, we came to the point that this research which showed that only one died was not real, and probably three of them died. You know, the problem of death in the camps at that time was not so easy, because usually what we know from Raoul Hilberg books and from the counting of Eichmann, people were counted, but usually they were counted also by the numbers, not necessarily by the names. So we can more precisely can say about numbers, but not necessarily about names, so it's hard to prove. Mm. So once the letter was sent, a few months later, the sister of Freud, I say the sister because the sister passed, the sisters died. And also what was interesting in this fact that Treblinka was with the 8,000 of citizens of Otchock, which is the small city near Warsaw, where I grew up and where I still have my studio. The 8,000 people on one day, on the 19th of August 1942, were sent to Treblinka and died. So also this layer was interesting for me in this project. So in this way, we had also Otchock, we had sisters of Sigmund Freud, and then this letter. And this letter was a starting point. So once we had this letter, we tried to describe by the volume how many, because there is we can count it, but let's say 15 positions of the materials which are needed. So we try to measure or imagine or check what is the size, what would be the size of the crates which can carry these elements which are needed for Treblinka. And we decided to make these plywood boxes which are presented in this room behind us. And these boxes are without bottoms, they are just empty. But you can knock at them, they are empty, but they just occupy the space. And I found also one photo I took in Vienna when I was in 91 in Freud's house in Vienna, and I took the photo, and I remember I took some photos, and I found these photos. It was still before digital, so I found the prints. Mm. And I noticed that it's just only one box standing there, and whereas everything is empty. Everything was empty in this house in Vienna. So then I knew it was like a good proof that my way of thinking is, it's not a good way, because there's a proof of this box, and there is a transportation, because all the goods which she brought here, they had to be crated. They didn't come in the plastic bags. No. At that time, the crate was quite solid, yes, and probably wooden, or maybe even plywood, because the plywood was a material which was in use from the 30s, actually. And having such big amount of the plywood in this room, for me, it's also interesting because of this, because it's like the plywood is made of the wood, yes? So this is, and Treblinka was very much about wood, because it was the forest, and this camp was just built in the forest, hidden in the forest, and after a year and a half of activity, it was taken down, and the new forest was put on the ground, because the Nazis wanted to hide any traces of their activities in the death camps. So such a big amount of the forest was also important for me.
How far away is it from where you live then?
Actually, Treblinka is exactly 111 kilometers from the... I measure it, because I wanted to know precisely, so as if you drive by car, but then they drove by trains, you know, the train went a very complicated way. And, so,
deal with your work, do you think they see this as a kind of mission of yours, something for Holocaust, reflecting it in your work in some way? No, is it a mission of yours?
Yeah, but which people?
Well, people that will read about what you're doing here, or South Africa, and then grew up and lived in the murder.
Yeah, but sometimes you know, the Holocaust problem is that once you start to work, I think that I work with the subject, it's very hard to get rid out of it, you know. This is a material which is not so clear, and it's very sticky material, and you never have a clean hands and minds once you start to work with this subject. So, and of course, it creates the problem and the interpretation of the work, because once you deal with the subject of Holocaust, and even if you make the words which are not related in the direct way of the Holocaust, the people always interpret it as related with Holocaust. So this is what happened with Turbine Hall, this black box first interpretation was Holocaust, and for me it was another layer of interpretation. But you know, everybody has the right to interpret in his own way, like.
So you see something more universal and specific in sculpting already, in a sense. It's not
No, I see, because I think that, you know, this is much wider sticking. But I'm saying that once you say the word Holocaust, the stickness of this word, it follows you, you know. So you are becoming kind of the Holocaust master. Even if you, I mean, what?
But I mean, how we have this whistling from the Great Escape, which in a way, it's slightly humorous in a way, isn't it? I mean, it puts a humorous touch on the whole thing.
I think it's also loneliness, and because in this imperfection of this history, you know, there is a kind of the loneliness and I think sadness in some way of the situation, and this is what interested me, you know, because however the melody is taken from a fantastic movie from 1963, The Great Escape, with the fantastic role of Steve McQueen, not the director of the slave, 12 years of slavery, a famous actor from that time. And I wanted to involve the main staff of the White Cube in the recording of this piece, The Great Escape. The whistling was recorded on last Friday in the Vermont Sea. We asked boys who are working in White Cube to come and whistle, and they thought that they would do whistle in the choir, like they would stay anonymous, but finally I decided that I asked them, because I could only ask to whistle individually, so we make the real line of 21 different whistlings. And whistling is quite interesting form of communication without the word. It's just using the mouth in a special way, the tongue. So it's very, very physical. And you feel the presence of the elements of your body much stronger than saying the words, because we say more than when we whistle. It was treated very seriously by the staff. I asked them just to play very decrescendo, so it was very slow, as slow as possible. And once you whistle slow, you can easily you can lose the melody, because you have too much time, and then it can get broken. So we selected these different whistlings. which were in some way, I like to keep the title, The Great Escape.
Well, they didn't escape, did they? They all got banged up again, and those that didn't get killed, nobody actually escaped. I thought one or two of them did.
Yes, yes, some of them, of course.
Not Steve, many, though.
Steve McQueen. This is Great Escape is also related with this tunnel here, which is in the front, this black tunnel. I mean, because when you escape, you have to dig parallelly to the earth surface. Means that you have to dig horizontally. But before you started to dig horizontally, first you have to dig vertically. So this what is outside could be also like the detail of the corridor to escape. Actually, when we start to talk about this show with James and the other friends, because it was subject of the discussion for a small group of friends, we had the idea that we will dig the tunnel from here to Mason's yard. But actually, we have just a fragment of the tunnel, so actually for tomorrow we also present the fragment of the tunnel at Mason's yard. That will be the relation between these two sides, you know, sometimes so we show part of the tunnel.
Maybe it's a nice kind of allusion to digging in the unconscious of Freud, I think. Is it? Does that come into your mind, or could you do, I don't know?
Maybe we can ask the scientists. Once I make the exhibition at Douglas Hyde Gallery in Dublin, which was called Dig Dug Dug. So, I mean, digging is, you know, it's quite important part of our life, and it's also digging at Hamlet, Shakespeare, yeah. Mm-hmm. Digging at the graveyard, digging for the grave. Mm-hmm. Actually, our lives ends with digging.
Yeah. I guess your videos haven't arrived.
But I just wondered, what is the time which we have for this? What time shall we supposed to finish? What time do those close? So we have to leave before. What?
We put them until 8:30.
8:30, ah, yes, good.
The video is 8:30.
Is 8 o'clock?
No, not even 8 o'clock yet.
Maybe we can say about a few important figures which were important in this show, which is Albrecht Dürer, which his Dürer's solid is presented on the top of this crate. This is the structure where you can put the hand, the head in. And this year it's 500 years. From when this engraving was made by Albrecht Dürer in 1514, and it's still a very powerful engraving and very influential and representing melancholia. So I wanted to have a connection with this melancholia and the subject of melancholia in the relation with this exile. And once I presented this Dürer solid, so also got another function, like the function of the Turnhelm, if I write, from Wagner's As Rheingold, which is a cup, the magic cup, which can be put on the head. And then you can disappear. And disappearing is also about the shame. So I wanted also to start the subject of the shame in the relation of the exile of Freud from Vienna, in the relation of the death of his sister. Of course, he didn't know that his sister died because, you know, he died in September 1939, so just as the war started, so didn't know yet what will be, how the war will look like. But this was important fact to get to connect Dürer with Wagner and the Great Escape. Yeah. And we prepared, I chose some video. Do we have the first one? Is it the first one from?
Yeah.
But do we have the Wagner?
No.
Oh, we don't have it. Okay.
What was
it? No, it was a fragment of opera which I wanted to show you. Because actually this magic helmet, it appeared in this, in Wagner. Can you pause for a while? Which appears in this opera, in the moment, once the Alberic, one of the main characters, the dwarf Alberic, put this magic helmet on his head, he says something that night and fog, I disappear, something like this. And this night and fog was the title of the action, of the name of the action of the Nazis in 1941, the Portations. But it's quite interesting moment of this opera, because some of Wagner's opera, most of them are very terrifying, you know, by the facts of even the action which is taking place. And once the Alberic got his magic helmet on his head, he starts to beat his brother. The brother doesn't see him, he just only screaming, oh, 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 oh. And this is very perverse, I think, attitude to name, knowing the action of the opera, to name this Nazi action with this name.
This connects with the video that's shown downstairs in the hallway.
Because also with this magic helmet, the oppression came. Oppression which was directed to the brother. So then we have the figure of the Cain, yes, and Abel, and the question of where are you, my brother, or what was the question from the Cain and Abel?
My brother's keeper?
Exactly. So this is a little bit, so what I like in the interpretations, and these are my little private digging, you know, and I like to discover the different layers of interpretation. From one layer, you go to another. But does it mean that you, visitors, have to find the same layers? I prefer even somebody can dig by itself, you know, not just using my digging. But I wanted to show you this little video piece which was called Flagellare, and I've been beating this couple of years ago. I've been beating with my belt the floor of the gallery of Barbara Gladstone in New York, and in three places it was called Flagellare A, Flagellare B, Flagellare C, and was presented on the floor, was beaten on three different places of the gallery. And when I made this piece, I didn't know yet this part of the Wagner, so finally, after this experience of Wagner, this experience of Rheingold, which I didn't know very well, but I know now, it put another light and open another layer. So maybe we can show it. Just go. If we don't have an opera, we can listen. Can we make it a little bit louder? Because it's going to be...
And is another.
He recorded this guy without asking him for permission, so it was made from the hidden camera. At that time, hidden camera was like a big box, you know, to bring for a meeting with him, with the transmission car standing on the street. So it was not like our, like today, everybody can record us. But what is important was the fact that he stole this image, I stole this image, and just made very short loop with this guy repeating the word primitive, yes, primitive, 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 becoming kind of the mantra of Ebu.
What so is the first word?
Spar primitive. What does it mean, spar, in German? For a long time I haven't shown this problem. What is it, spar?
Sort of reinforcing, just primitive.
Yes, just primitive. So this is related with Treblinka, which is related with this work. That's why I chose this piece to show you. And I don't know what this stands for.
Actually, it was Esvar primitive, I think.
Maybe
it could have been Svar or Esvar. It means the same, you know, it was. Young German playing snowballs
and entering to the camp. It was a beautiful winter day. So they just made the natural soundtrack of the piece.
It's still this, there's some ambiguity in just looking at the image that has significance to what you think you have to know, the context, the story behind all of this video books. Do you think you have, the viewer has to have the whole context of the
No, but images. I think that this image is quite strong, and I think it is recognizable, or should be, this letter B. I mean, for me it is like elementary thing, so I don't know who from you recognized that this is the letter from the Arbeit Max Frey from Auschwitz.
Well, it's inverted, isn't it? The B is inverted.
Yeah.
And it was stolen, the sign.
Hmm?
The sign was stolen.
This is quite interesting because when I made this film, video where I mean, nobody put any attention at me, but then a few years later, all this Arbeit Macht Frei was stolen because the Swedish collector who hired the Polish thieves who stole it from him. But finally, they found it. Yeah. I'm afraid that nowadays, if somebody would be standing with camera and filming this, Arbeit Macht Frei would be very fast, asked for the ID from because they got very obsessed now with what they have there. However, it's a lot of fake things in Auschwitz, because they make the copy of this Arbeit Macht Frei, so sometimes you don't know what is real or what is not. And it's kind of very interesting, but this is for another discussion, but I also analyzed few elements which were not real, but then they were presented like the real, but they were like the decoration for the movie, and later, because nobody took it away, so it stayed in the place, and people look at this like the real wall, and then this real wall was just the wall for the movie reasons, so it's quite an open formula, I think.
Mm. In some of the videos you make are quite spontaneous, aren't they? You see something that occurs to you, but they're not necessarily all cleverly thought out beforehand.
Yeah. but I make them in a spontaneous way, but I don't choose the places in the spontaneous way. Because if I plan, for example, to go on the winter day, the kind of the winter riser, to go to Auschwitz, this is what I'm planning. But then I don't know what I meet there, because for example I had the plan to record this letter B. This was part of my journey, letter B in winter, but I didn't expect that I would get this soundtrack, which in the natural way, which completely changed the meaning of this work. Became much more terrifying.
To get some questions.
So maybe this is enough. Of this video, because we could look at them and we can analyze them and interpret them. But for me, I thought that it would be interesting to show these pieces here in this house, which where Sigmund Freud spent year of his life. So, to bring these images, because for me, these are not just the video works, they're also these are kind of the video memorials and video, because by fact of doing these things, I became kind of the witness of some situations taking place there. So, that's why I thought that maybe it would be good to have them here as well.
This is a pretty rude fact that they can show archive film footage of Freud in the garden and things, and then I was here, so just kind of
see. Yeah.
So would anyone like to ask Miroslav a question? about the exhibition here or generally about his work? Yes, Michael.
You were talking about ideas that you reject, that people don't need to know about. Can I bring you back to that? Because I was in on the rejection of one idea. When you first came here, you had the ideas of toilets. I don't know if you can cast your mind back. When you first came in here, you looked at the shop roof that had been designed by Ernst Troy, the architect, son of Sigmund, and it's made up of these glass holes. And this gave you the idea of a concrete installation with holes in, which would take you back to the toilets in the concentration camp. And you were actually discussing, you're looking puzzled now. You're going to say, I fantasized this.
No, it's true, I remember that.
You remember? Ah, good, I'm glad there's a witness. Anyway, you came up with this idea of a set of toilets. So that didn't occur to you again, or you rejected it. Was there a reason for that?
No, actually, I forgot about it. But, I think there came many ideas. Also, Anushka reminded me that I had idea of kebab stand here, but I don't remember what was this idea of this kebab. But I like to deal with, there is a spoken word, which for me sometimes it's safer than say more, and it sounds quite weird. But when I come back to the studio and when I with this by myself, so maybe saying this word, saying the idea is a kind of a game which I'm having, and also saying this aloud, I'm also testing this with myself, because once I sell the toilet, because it will be different if I would say this in the quietness of my studio, it took me much more time to analyze if does it make sense or not. But when I say with the presence of other people, we discuss this and I say this, so I can easier close the subject of this problem. Because once I hear it, and this word is becoming three-dimensional in space, and I know that this is a stupid idea. So this, I like this game sometimes, saying different ideas which we will never turn the real ones.
Yeah, I thought you thought it was a good idea, actually, but I mean, not artists. Could I just ask why, with the crates in the exhibition, why they haven't been stacked at all? They're all separate and you have...
It was also a kind of the game with the memorial of Holocaust in Berlin.
That's exactly what I thought.
But the more ecological, cheaper version and domestic size version.
It's exactly that's the first thought that came to me when I saw it, and it works. I think it has the same kind of impact in this domestic space as the Holocaust Memorial in Berlin. So I think it works.
Yeah, but I think it's even stronger because
of the emptiness.
Because of the emptiness, there is this kind of interesting function of knocking. When you knock in it, and it's empty. And very often, I think that the difference between painting and sculpture is that when you see the sculpture, you have to knock into the sculpture. Because you don't knock into the painting. But when you see the sculpture, it's just the curiosity which I have, in museum. I see the sculpture, bronze sculpture, it's just the temptation of to knock. And this is also, it was about this temptation of knocking, and once you knock, then you get this sound of emptiness. And this, how this work should work, that you knock and then you are confronted with emptiness. And this is more or less about... This is one of the subjects which is important in this world.
It also the boxes also displace you. I mean, they leave very little room for people. Mm. when you're being displaced by influence.
Yeah, but also there is this situation that you don't know if these boxes are to, they're brought here with something, or they will leave from here with something, so it's just like question, I mean, you don't know what will be the function of this. It's just stand, or is it a pin for the work, or?
I mean, you can move the restriction in that you can move down, but it's restricted, that control as well.
Yeah, this is what you said today about this contact with the body once you enter first.
Yes,
the part of the body.
Jab me in my crotch.
Basically. Yeah. Yeah, this
I'm
is
about the same height as you.
So this is this relation. Very, very relation. But I think that's why we leave this first box just in the entrance, just to get first contact, you know, the physical contact. Not have the safe distance and then see it from the perspective and then not touch it. I mean, you have to get this body relation. And I'm always saying that the viewer is not just the eyes, you know, because the eyes are carried by the body. And the body is walking, the body is checking, measuring the space, and the eyes are just one of the elements of the part of our perception of life. They are also ears, which we have been involved as well, and there is a smell. It's a lot of senses which can follow work of art.
Could you say something about the elevation of the two parts of the show? Where you've used the, in the title, you've used the right above sea level. What were you thinking in that? Is that designated?
I don't know yet. I hope that I will know tomorrow when I open the other show. Because now I know the half of this. Yeah, I hope that I would be able to answer for your question tomorrow after around 8 o'clock.
Okay. Let's say 10 past.
10 past 8, okay. When we leave the space.
Well, there's the walk at the beginning of in the interpretation of dreams, when Freud talks about walking up a mountainside, but the book. The book shall be like a walk, that he will take the reader up to a height from which he will see, have an overview. So you felt you're going up heights there.
I have to say honestly that I didn't read this book. I got it. But I couldn't just dedicate this time. However, I collect quite a few books of Freud, and I'm going, if I have time, you know, to look it closer, but I was so concentrated on this project, I couldn't just jump into the process of reading his books, because this would be not the way where I could find the solutions, visual solutions for these two exhibitions, but as I said about the frame, it was important.
Well, I've just put that as an interpretation.
Yeah.
Everybody has their own.
Yeah, but it was interesting story, you know, like when we which we discussion which we had at the beginning, why this title is going to be in German, Die Traumdeutung, because it's already the translation exists, yes, and it's interpretation of dreams, yes, is it correct?
Yeah.
And but why shouldn't we call this exhibition the interpretation of dreams. And then I start to analyze the word, what you have in this press release, and I start to analyze this word, the Traumdeutung, in my way, to explain the stuff of the museum, that it has to be the Traumdeutung, not the interpretation of dream. And this was the D, which in English is die, Traum, which is trauma, and then is Deu, it's Latin Deu, God. And then I found a very crazy element of this explanation. It was the word tung, which in Albanian language is by. And once I glue these words together, or I divided this title in these words, I found that especially the word tung was very important. And I think it was in the relation of the interpretation, that you can interpret it very often in your own way. And this was my way, how I wanted to interpret this, the title of the show, the Traumdeutung. But just as a game of the language, which can also contain craziness and seriousness. So this word tung was added at the end, I mean, it was the last element added to the serious area elements of dying, trauma, God.
Tung is always female. As an ending, to add something to it.
What?
It's the ending ung,
yes,
is always female. If that adds something to your...
Really?
Yeah.
what we will do with the T then? And what will be the interpretation of T?
T.
Because the letter T, what can be the interpretation of letter T? The cross? Maybe crucifixion? Because probably at that time the cross was rather like the letter T, not like the Latin cross which we use as a symbol of crucifixion. I think it was closer to letter T.
Has anybody else got any questions you'd like to
ask? With the video for the Albert McFly, you said that you went to the camp to film the bead. I mean, is that because it's the letter of your name?
I'm not such obsessed with my name as Marcel Gotthard, a Belgian artist who, from his initials MB, closer a little bit to mine, made his important subject of his work. But for me, B is rather related with the being. You know? But there is this being.
Miroslav, rather cheekily, can I ask? I'm so sorry.
No.
Have you done an analysis?
What is this?
It's not expensive.
No. And you?
Oh, yeah.
Probably.
I'll tell you more, 8:10 tomorrow.
Okay.
How do you feel about light or dark when space kind of replacing emptiness? So, suppose with the turbine piece, the kind of black or darkness for me kind of became a piece or kind of replaced emptiness.
That's a very, very hard question. One of the interpretators of this sculpture at the Turbine Hall, a friend of mine, a Polish sociologist living in UK for many, many years, the guy who had to escape from Poland in 1968 in the wake of the anti-Semitism, was a professor of sociology in the Leeds University, Sigmund Bauman. When he made the... Do you know who is Sigmund Bauman? Who is Sigmund Bauman? You can read his books, it's very... I think he's translated quite well. He should be.
He took part in a conference organized by...
Unfortunately, he was ill and he couldn't come up.
He was in the publication, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So Sigmund Bauman, yeah, when he interpretate this darkness in this, how it is. Have you been this piece? So he interpreted this darkness as a positive surroundings where the people can feel much more united, much more friendly to each other. And I think that in every darkness you can find the... Actually, none of the darkness is so black as it is at the beginning, you know. And then we start to deal with this, our eyes adjust. But also in the metaphorical way, you can interpret it as that. And this is what happened with the, like, during the time of the Holocaust, you know. It was very black, but then it were different shades in it as well. And once you were in, probably, because we don't know, it was not so black as we see it now, you know, because it were the moments of happiness, the moments of sorrow, but it was life, you know, everyday life as well. So, I don't know how to answer that question.
Well, there is a relation, isn't there, between the idea that you can put your head inside the stone here,
yeah,
and your whole body inside the one that might kill.
Yes. To disappear.
To disappear, yeah.
Yeah, but what we have here, this is the disappearing, because you can try to put the head in this shape. But this is like the disappearing of the ostrich. And very often the history is full of these situations which are close to this kind of the disappearing and avoiding the confrontations. As we put the head in the ground, or we hide our heads, we switch off our heads, and then we think that the problem is over. Well, I'm becoming too poetic for the time is now.
Are we allowed to switch the sculpture on outside?
Or maybe yes, maybe we can switch to Adam for the end.
The situation is that our next door neighbour has made a serious complaint. And he's sleeping on his decision about whether to allow us to have it on during the time. And we said we'd have it on once tonight, which we've done. Michael will have to go and negotiate with him. If you're going to... It's Anthony.
Anthony!
Somebody who's never complained about anything in, you know, 25 years. So it's not about he's a... serial complainer.
So it's successful exhibition. A
triumph of interpretation. So
it was on earlier, was it? I didn't see it. Was it on earlier?
Yeah. I mean, we have to.
But I think that actually, I think if I can say the last word, I think in this situation, however, I understand that. This gentleman, you know, lives here for 40 years. He was supportive, what I was told, to the institution. But I think that you as an institution, if you want to deal with contemporary art, I think you should also fight for the right of the contemporary art.
Of course,
but you shouldn't escape from this problem that one gentleman said, seeing the work for 5 minutes working. He got so angry, he promised us that the police will come. And then the museum got very quiet and asked me, "Can we? Probably we shouldn't have this work on." And I think that once the work of art goes into the public space, this is a good place to start the negotiations.
on the other hand...
We cannot just hide our heads like this ostrich, which I mentioned, and say, no problem, we hide the Adam,
we won't show it. Obviously, we're trying to create a situation where we have the maximum amount of showing of the sculpture, so that's the situation we want. It's a question of how we arrive at that. And we're not going to arrive at it by taking the Putin approach. It's not going to work. We've got to actually negotiate.
Yeah, but I think it's good to negotiate. Of course we will.
And we'll try to, you know, have it on as much as we can. But in terms of, you know, lessons from the past, the museum has not shied away from controversy in Bulgaria, and we have been closed down before now by the local council for works of art. So I think, you know, and we can, obviously we're not going to function very well if we actually close down for the situation. So that's the, you know, it's a delicate situation, and we'll do our best. But we could try now, you know.
We could invite him always.
Of course, we invite him.
And ask him what actually disturbed him.
It's a really good idea.
Well, what's disturbing is the terrible racket that the things like that, the noise.
But I think it's not the noise. I think it's the shape, if I can say.
It's
right. And the stupidity which I mentioned of this object, and it's very difficult for this gentleman to not having experience with different visual things, I think that if this work would be hidden or the engine would be working on, his reaction wouldn't be so against, like seeing first, because it was, I think that somebody with no practice, even I call this sculpture stupid.
Yeah.
So imagine somebody who has no experience with this and he didn't work with this.
What do you think it might be? I mean, there is something, you know, basically, I thought it was going to just stand up erect and stay there. And I was very pleased with that. I think that's very good. And instead, it kind of flaps about, you know, in a hysterical manner. Look. And of course, that is actually disturbing, as you say, for even somebody who's kind of used to, you know, somebody
excessive.
Being
erect.
And perhaps that is something that has disturbed me. But how we kind of get around that is.
Yeah, but I think that we should negotiate the time of presentation. This is what we said
yesterday. That's what we're doing.
So this probably
exactly
should
doing
be the direction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you speak to him?
I don't know this gentleman. No.
I mean, there is some psychoanalytic work done on noise and things like drumming and making a noise. And, you know, obviously, you know, people like Ernest Jones, one of Freud's great sort of colleagues, he written that, and obviously in a sexual way, you know, and you think of noises that we make from the body, you know, and how those things are.
So maybe this would be a good subject to organize the small symposium on top about the noise.
I think that's why not?
If actually the noise became the main issue of this situation, so
yeah.
When
I lost my football when I was about 9 years old to the guy over who kept this football and we played in the streets, and then my dad went over to negotiate and get the football back in his car. You know, it was my dad for me. But 2 hours later, he comes back. You know, we waited there for 2 hours for a bloody football. He comes back and we're best friends with the man next door without the football.
Without the
Funnily enough, somebody who was a Holocaust survivor, Maybe that's why you're talking about all, you know, it's kind of...
I would like to recommend you reading again. It's very important.
Yeah.
And there is a beautiful poetry about the death of Freud, which was written in September 1903 by W.H. Auden. And it's really good and highly recommended.
Yeah.
I forgot about, because I brought it, but I wanted somebody of you, someone to read this, but next time. Thank you very much.